Today's episode is sponsored by Koroz. Koroz is the leading customer engagement platform. From social media to online communities to digital customer care, Koroz helps companies authentically connect with customers. Koroz connects consumer insights across departments and helps companies run their businesses with their customers, anticipating their needs and accelerating sales. Koroz works with over 2,000 brands, including 52 of the Interbrand 100 companies, and powers over 500 million digital interactions every day. Check them out at koroz.com. That's K-H-O-R-O-S.com. Hello and welcome to the Shiny New Object Podcast. My name is Tom Ollerton, founder of Automated Creative, and this is a podcast about the future of marketing. Every week or so, I have the pleasure and the privilege of interviewing one of our industry's leaders, and this week is no different. I have Michael Codd, who is Marketing Transformation Lead for Europe at AB InBev. I was introduced to Michael a little while ago, don't know him so well, but I'm really excited to be here at their office in the smallest meeting room in the building, so apologise if it's a bit roomy, but it's a real treat to be here. So Michael, for anyone who's listening to this podcast who doesn't know who you are or what you do, can you do a quick introduction?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Tom. I lead our intersection between marketing and technology, basically for Zone Europe. So I'm providing the tech stack as well as some of the data management for our marketing department, and I'm a kind of bit of an internal technical consultant as well for our brand managers, and quite involved in all the campaigns we run for some of our great brands.
So as is customary on the podcast, we're going to do some getting to know you questions. So there's two types of people on this podcast. There's readers and there's not readers. Some people are like, I don't read any marketing books. And some people are like, I read all the marketing books. Where do you sit on that?
I sit somewhere in the middle. I don't read a lot of marketing specific books, but I love reading books about business, about technology in general. And reading a very kind of interesting book around learning about failures right now, which is fascinating me.
And which book is that?
So it's called Black Box Thinking by Matthew Syed. And so there's a lot of books covering this kind of topic around learning with failure, being comfortable with failure, even embracing failure. But this one specifically has some really good data and stories around how companies should learn from mistakes, and how especially some companies and industries don't do that at all.
So if I was never going to read that book, what are the things that I need to learn from it?
So I think just being comfortable at admitting mistakes without blaming people for those mistakes, because the opening of the book is really interesting. It compares the airline industry with the healthcare industry, and there was this story around a woman dying from a really routine operation due to a bunch of human mistakes, fuck-ups, call them like that, and the husband, who they informed, saying, really sorry, there were some complications. He was a pilot, and he was like, well, if this happens in the airline industry, we wouldn't just accept this. So he went to ask more data around what happened, and they said, well, only if they sue us we'll ever release that information. So he sued them, and then he found that all these manual errors that the doctors made, that the nurses made, etc. And he's kind of highlighting this not to blame anyone, but rather to say, like, look, I don't want this to happen again in the future. I want other people to not go through what I went, and that's why we need to be open about this, and hence the title Black Box Thinking.
So I've worked at agencies and businesses where talking about failure is it's quite a, I don't know, quite a sexy and risky thing to do, like fail fast, like, or what was Facebook's things you speak, like move fast and break things or something like that.
Yeah.
But what I always struggled with as an innovation person was really creating any kind of culture where failure was acceptable, because as much as you could go, it doesn't matter, we failed, look, we got all this data, it's still seen as a failure in an industry where, you know, you don't want your agency going, oh yeah, we failed loads of times. Yeah. So how do you deal with that internally? Yeah. How do you make sure failure isn't perceived as a completely negative thing?
I think there's an element of trying to take the seriousness out of it. And so what we introduced is this concept of fuck-up awards. And every team meeting, someone needs to present their biggest fuck-up of the month and what they learned from that. And because we don't take it that seriously in this context, people are quite comfortable sharing that. We do take the learnings. We make sure they're documented, and also that kind of other people are aware of what's going on and why. And that's just one element, the way we treat that. But I think in general, it is very culture specific thing, being comfortable with that you need to find for your own organization, I guess, on how you'll deal with that.
So other than investing money in useful tech and inspiration books, what's been the best investment of your time, energy, and money in the last few years?
So I would say in terms of time and energy, it's really asking feedback constantly, not waiting for your yearly performance cycle to finish to get feedback on your performance, but proactively going towards your manager, your peers, your clients, your team, asking feedback, getting that negative feedback, and realizing then these are the elements I need to work on to grow. And if you don't do that, you're not going to grow as fast. And in terms of money as well, interestingly, when I finished university and I started my career, I spent a bit of money on a career coach, just kind of couple of sessions. And she was more like a psychiatrist to me at that time, where she actually highlighted some mental things I had to deal with, dating back to my childhood even, that I needed to be aware of, otherwise it would have held me back kind of in a work environment. And that's been really interesting, just to be kind of conscious and mindful about that when I'm dealing with certain situations.
So many questions to ask on that. So in terms of feedback, how do you get that feedback? Do you like knock on the door of team manager and ask them, come on, like, you know, help me out here? Or do you do like surveys, or like how it's a great idea, but how do you actually do it? Is it regular, or do you just do it at different times?
I try to do it, let's say, with someone on a monthly basis, and not always with your manager, but trying to pick some peers or people you work regularly with. And I book in a one-to-one, and it's not like I would go in and ask, hey, give me some feedback, what's bad, where can I improve? It's sometimes also just taking the angle of, we finished this project, I want to do a post-mortem, what do you think went well or not? And that naturally evolves into a conversation about how your performance is, or which gaps you might want to be working on in terms of your performance.
And I'm really interested to hear about the career coach. So, not cheap thing to do. Like, why did you do that? Like, what made you reach out to a career coach to help you deal with these problems that you say go a long way back?
It wasn't a conscious, this is something I need to do. It was more, my sister works in HR, so having conversations with her early on about the kind of challenges you deal with in a work environment, because a work environment is not a safe place like your home environment might be, or your football environment. So there's certain areas where it gets tense, and my sister knew me very well, so like, hey, you could probably just like talk to a coach about that, maybe just plan in two sessions of an hour, just talk a few things through. I was super skeptical in the beginning, but actually I found it very valuable.
And do you still do that?
I haven't had many sessions, so I just had three sessions over a period of time, and I'm gonna continue that, but it's really not like a monthly thing. It's maybe, you know, every 6 months you have a session, just catching up, kind of. It's just a more informal chat where she gets information from me about how stuff is going, and then she also gives feedback on some things that I might want to follow up or read upon.
So I'm assuming you would make that as a great bit of advice for someone getting into the industry. What else would you say to a young student who is getting into the business? How would you get them to prepare for joining this industry?
I think in marketing, more than anything, there's three things. I'd say, first of all, find your specialty and what you're passionate about and what you're really gonna wanna learn more about. Second is like, make it even more of a specialty. So ask loads of questions. Like, you cannot ask too many questions in the beginning. But make sure you really deep dive and specialize into one topic and become good at it. Like, I would advise not to want to be a manager from day one, because you'll learn that further down the line anyway. But if you have a specialized topic, you're going to get opportunities. And that comes to the third point, is to use your network in finding those opportunities. There's some great roles out there. If you have certain knowledge and skills that other people don't have, there's going to be roles out there for you that'll be very exciting. And I see career more like a collection of experiences rather than a ladder, probably. So, like, there'll be really exciting opportunities there that'll get you experience and help you kind of grow later on.
So your first point was focus on something you're passionate about. That's advice I hear quite a lot. But what I hear more than that is people who go, I don't really know what I'm passionate about. Or even worse than that, I'm passionate about a lot of things. So what are the telltale signs to know that you're actually passionate about something versus just mildly interested or it's cool at the minute? And how do you make sure that the thing you're really passionate about is something that's got legs?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I would say the sign is if you're spending your free time on a certain topic, that's probably a sign that you're passionate about. So for me, within marketing technology, I'm constantly listening to podcasts and reading blogs around, hey, if there's a new iOS update, you know, what features are included in that? And I don't do this at work. I do it more like on the weekend at home. So that's kind of a sign, I would say, that you're passionate about something.
So tell me what you listen to and read at the weekend.
So podcasts, I do a lot of marketing stuff. So my two favorite ones are the CMO podcast by Jim Stengel. He talks to like really high level leaders in the industry. He's a great moderator, asking great questions and stuff. The second one is Marketing Over Coffee, which I love and listen to, and Shiny New Object, of course.
And you said you read books, your blogs as well. Like, I'm fascinated by this. On Saturday morning, you've been at work all week, you've done a crazy hour week, and you're like, and you wake up, you have a coffee, and you read blogs. And it must be so good. Tell me what they are.
Yeah, so outside of work, I'm passionate about sports, and I do all that stuff as well. But from what is related to my work, I mean, Tech Insider is a great blog. I have my Google Home, which I have like listed those news articles that are marketing tech related, that, you know, when I'm making my breakfast, I'll just ask Google, hey, good morning, and then she'll tell me all kinds of stuff that I'm interested in, what happened in the last day.
Yeah, I use Google Home in a very similar way. So you choose the specific new skills around tech.
Yeah, indeed.
So what have you become better at saying no to? I mean, you say yes to a lot of stuff here. You know, you're working the weekends, essentially, you know, one way or another. And you've got your smart speaker telling you everything that you don't already know. So what have you become better at saying no to?
I mean, besides my wife, you mean, right? No, so I would... I used to always say yes to new scope at work, and someone would ask me, hey, can you do this, and you want to help, so you always say yes. But I noticed that it gets to a point where you can't follow up on everything anymore, and that means you say yes to something and you're not delivering quality or you're not delivering on time. And now more and more I'm just saying no to projects or requests from people. I think we're talking about books. There's a really good book called Give and Take by Adam Grant, and it's about like creating teams and a culture of givers, right? People who want to go out of their way to do stuff for other people, whereas on the flip side you have takers who are always kind of asking for favors and asking people to do stuff for them. And if you have a whole team of only givers, it creates such a great atmosphere and environment that you don't even have to say no. But when you notice that there are some takers in a work environment that are always asking for favors, at that point sometimes you need to say no if it's not like a healthy balance between you doing that person a favor and you getting favors back from that person.
If you love all things innovation and want to understand how brands plan to emerge stronger from the current situation, don't forget to check out Madfest London on the 11th and 12th of November. My good friend Dan at Madfest knows how to put on a cracking event, and there's always plenty of amazing speakers, beer and cool people to meet. Check it out at www.madfestlondon.com. So we're at the halfway stage now. So we're going to talk about your shiny new object. And your shiny new object is quite complex. You wanted to talk about the role of the in-house agency, but also the DevOps and agile processes and skill sets within that. So we've seen a lot of press, certainly in the last 2 years, about the in-house agency becoming a big thing. Whereas I remember 10 years ago, it was like brands were crazy to have an in-house agency. So for anyone who's listening to this podcast who doesn't specifically understand what an in-house agency is, can you describe that in the context of your business?
Yeah, so it's really developing an internal team that is end-to-end delivering the same what an agency might deliver for a business, being starting with the creative side, to production, to media, to social, to DevOps, and basically we treat that as if it was an external agency. So they need to be briefed by the brands, they need to pitch, they have like an internal cost as well, that brands, and also there's an internal NPS score, so Net Promoter Score, that they are judged upon the quality of their work.
So tell me about the pitch, that is new to me. So who do they pitch against?
So the brands will come with a brief, they need to take that brief, you know, they can ask questions, then they'll propose some ideas, and that's more the creative side. And we're not doing all of this internally, so we're still very much working with agencies, and agencies we're very happy to work with, because we also realize whilst we want to internalize some knowledge and experience, we also see great value in these experts within the agencies that help us. So sometimes we are working together with agencies to get some ideas, and then those ideas will also be pitched towards the brands internally to get their feedback as if this is the direction the campaign should go.
And so what are the real successes that you're seeing with the in-house agency approach? What's really surprised you?
I think the biggest win that I'm seeing is how fast we can turn around certain campaigns. So with an agency, there's always a commercial discussion before you can actually start doing the work. Whereas internally, that is already predefined what the cost will be, etc. So when we need to be reactive in a market, let's take, for example, the Euros 2020 coming up. We know there's going to be stuff. We need to be reactive. We need to be fast. And having the ability to push out campaigns with internal skills will allow us to be much faster in reacting to that moment that is really resonating with our consumers.
And do you think it's the same skill set for an in-house agency person for an external person? Do you think they need to have the same background, or, you know, would you happily hire someone from an external agency versus another internal agency? What can you help me understand the difference between a good in-house person versus a good external person?
I think these are very similar profiles, actually, because we are trying to replicate agencies, the value that they deliver with an internal team. So we have very creative profiles in-house. We have these kind of production, very expert profiles as well. And I see this as no different as the kind of profiles that the agencies also have within their teams. So we try to kind of build these profiles that will, of course, fit within our culture.
So as an ex-agency person myself, one of the things that was quite appealing working in an agency was it was always very different. So one day you'd be working on one vertical and then the next would be another. Whereas one might argue that actually that you don't get that with an in-house team. So how do you sustain that sort of rich creative environment internally?
Yeah, I think we're very lucky that we have some really interesting campaigns and sponsorships here at AB InBev. So Budweiser sponsoring the Premier League, Bud Light sponsoring the English national team. And then, of course, Corona has some really engaging cons, like experiences and consumer moments. So I think with the brands that we have, we're quite lucky because we can offer our employees really interesting stuff to work on. However, it's still the beer industry, which I would argue is not the most boring. But it is true that from an agency perspective, you'll get wider range of industries. But here you'll get one industry and you'll really start to understand that industry and those consumers very well.
And so your focus in specifics is marketing transformation. Now, you have a big responsibility over DevOps. Mm-hmm. So can you help me understand how that works and what are the challenges that you face?
So similar to what the marketing team is doing with the in-house agency, the scope that I'm covering within that ethos is that we are providing the technology, we're managing a lot of the data, governance, etc. And we're now also managing the development. So we have a team of developers that is working on all our websites, and that is in a very kind of agile scrum fashion where we have our scrum master, we have a team of like four developers there, you know, going through product backlog and really delivering value, I see, very fast and with really good quality for those campaigns that are sometimes really time sensitive as well.
And the website development piece could often be the slow, expensive thing to do externally.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to know what do you think the role of the website is moving forward? Is it about having one strong centralized place that consumers can always go to, or is it about lots of really lightweight websites to support activations?
There's a really interesting internal debate going on about like, do we do websites or do we do social, right? And you want to kind of send your focus into one of those channels. It's hard to do both at the same time, I would argue. It's about a place that holds the content, and the pro on the website side is you have full control, but you might not have the reach. On social, you're losing some of the control, but you have the reach. So there's a trade-off to be made there. I see the role of websites as still being very important in terms of having a touch point with your consumers where you have control, where you can kind of engage with them, ask them questions, get feedback, which is something that the social channels is a bit harder to do or more expensive to do. But at the same time, if we want to go reach with a campaign, we will for sure still rely on platforms like Facebook and Instagram.
And so what are the things that are really inspiring you at the minute from other brands, in-house agencies? Do you think there's someone else who's doing like a really great job that you guys look to and think, oh my god, they produce a lot in-house, that's amazing? Like where are your aspirations versus where you guys are now?
Yeah, I have great admiration for what Red Bull is doing and their content generation factory, because what they do is they're not focusing on the huge sports or the huge platforms because they know that's expensive to get like a really strong foothold. So what they did is they're targeting, you know, extreme sports or adventure, and they're really owning that space by generating content, really strong content. And I am sure a lot of that is organic as well, because you know, you don't have to pay for people to watch great content. And when you see all these baseline jumpers and stuff jumping off, you know, Eiffel Tower, things like this, that's stuff that people want to watch. So with a brand that's you know, not the biggest brand in the world, they will manage to get so much exposure for that brand with the content they produce.
And so they're an interesting brand in the sense that I feel that there's quite a big disconnect between the content they produce and the product. Like, you know, everyone knows what Red Bull content is, but are all those people ever going to buy a can of Red Bull? You know, I mean, I interviewed on this podcast the founder of Tenzing, Huub van Bokkel, who actually left, he was the CMO of Red Bull, and he's actually gone and set up his own energy drink using natural ingredients only. You know, so it's a kind of very different product, and mm-hmm. with the move away from sugary drinks into a much more healthy lifestyle, like how do you see Red Bull making sense of that gap? How do you see them making sense of someone jumping off a 3,000 high cliff in a squirrel suit or wing, whatever mm-hmm. it's called, and then landing on a bus and with loads of cool 17-year-old people? How do they make that link between people who aren't ever going to buy like a high sugar, potentially quite bad for you product?
Yeah, I would agree that the product is something I don't resonate with at all, but like the contents that they put out is something that really fascinates me. I think they were really smart in how they did it, that they have this tagline of giving you wings, and so they're making this bridge between creating a persona around that product, like, hey, it's an energy drink, but like you have this, you're gonna fly, to then linking that to the content. And I see this little tagline and the images they create around that as being the bridge between weird wild sports and a product that maybe is not drunk by people who perform those sports.
So back onto the in-house piece. So we're talking at a very much a strategic level. How do we get people like yourselves who loves the content but is never going to buy the product potentially?
Mm-hmm.
So where does the strategy piece sit? Is that come from your internal agency, or is that the bit that gets outsourced to the Zone One hipsters?
I think it's strategy comes from conversation, right? And there's agencies that have been working with us for a very long time who know the brand so well, who know the consumer so well. And we have that internal team with the brands as well as with like in-house agency creative strategists. And I think in terms of strategy, there's still a very strong element that is driven by the agency, but it's always in collaboration with the brands and back and forth to then really, really deliver a strategy that can be worked towards and can be adjusted where needed during the execution phase as well, right?
So you are pretty experienced and pretty in deep with in-house agencies, but also having your own and being responsible for the DevOps element. There'll be some people listening to this podcast who've got no idea how to do this stuff. So if someone is responsible for making the decision about getting an in-house agency, or someone is being forced to use an in-house agency, what advice would you give to someone who's in either of those positions to really make in-house work for them?
Yeah, I hope no one's getting forced to do this at the companies, but I would say start small. So take a piece, be that social community management, for example, social listening, and see where maybe you have a gap on agency side and something you want to fill, or something where hey, there's enough work for us to justify a full-time resource to work on this. Start small and that can expand, because with us it's still also this hybrid model of in some areas working with agencies, some areas doing internal. And I think you need to find that balance and pick those elements that there's enough work, that something maybe the agencies are not performing to the level you might require, and then start there and see if you want to expand from there.
Cool. So we're going to have to leave it there because we're almost up for time. So if someone wanted to reach out to you to get some advice or to help point them in the right direction, how would you like them to do that?
Yeah, so come find me on LinkedIn. I'd love to chat to people who are interested in this stuff. And I'm always open. I'm living in London, so always open to meet up for a coffee or, of course, a beer. Right?
You have a very nice bar here as well on the top floor. And if someone's going to reach out to you on LinkedIn, what makes a good reach out on LinkedIn?
So in this case, it would be I heard your podcast and want to hear more. So I think I'm really receptive to people who want to have a conversation. I think it's a great platform to connect to people, and really, really eager to get feedback on some of the work I'm doing, and also hopefully provide a bit of advice for people who may be starting off in this journey.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.